and welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, flavor, stories from the land, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Sita Rani Brian.
And we have a great show lined up for you today as we are taking a close look at the different food traditions that are celebrated this fall. From Sukkot, the Jewish holiday, to Kwanzaa, the African-American celebration, to Eid al-Adha, the Islamic holiday celebrated worldwide by Muslims. Kwanzaa, Sukkot, Eid al-Adha, celebrating food traditions with some wonderful guests that will tell us the whole story of what these holidays are all about. All that and more today on An Organic Conversation.
Yeah, you know, we all grow up with these traditions that we think are, they're familiar to us, and so we think that's the way it is in the rest of the world. And there are so many different traditions around harvest and celebrating and community that we aren't even aware that even exists sometimes. And I'm so excited about this show and about the possibility of learning about these different traditions and cultures and how they celebrate.
We're changing that today.
Yeah.
Well, and coming from the world of food, I know that people, you know, they partake in these food traditions a lot about healing, you know, with nutrients, healing your body, but also about healing your heart, you know, healing your family and your community. And I think that these celebrations are a way to heal on multiple levels.
Yes, and we absolutely, you know, it's all about community and it's all about healing.
Yes.
And so I can't wait to get in, but we do have to wait. And before we get into the show, let's hear the green headlines from Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. France has introduced new dietary guidelines for their schools, and ketchup is on the chopping block. The guidelines state that children will be allowed to consume French fries once a week, and only then will they be permitted to eat ketchup. According to the Huffington Post, the ban is designed to preserve French food culture and also specifies that schools must serve 4 to 5 different dishes each day. A Brazilian judge has ordered a halt on any work that would interfere with the natural flow of the Amazon Xingu River, barring the Norte Energia Company from constructing a multi-billion-dollar dam. The judge cited fears that the dam would have negative repercussions for river communities who rely on small-scale fishing. The consortium behind the project is expected to appeal, citing robust environmental analysis on their part as proof that the dam will not displace thousands. And a new long-term study by the Rodale Institute has shown that there are massive ecological benefits to organic agriculture, bolstering the industry's drive to promote organic farming. The 30-year study covers crop yields as well as sustainable energy and fertilizer use, and even indicated that organic produce can be cheaper for farmers to grow than conventional methods in the long run. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thanks, Jen Lloyd. Thank you so much for that weekly update of what's going on in the world. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Brian.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview about Kwanzaa, Sukkot, and Eid al-Adha, celebrating food traditions only here on An Organic Conversation today. More on that when we come back right after the break.
Best things in life aren't things to live in and breathe in. The best things in life aren't things, there's something you can believe in. Do you believe? Believe me when I say tonight won't last for long.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Brian.
And today's show is about holidays, special holidays, Kwanzaa, Sukkot, and Eid al-Adha, as we are celebrating food traditions today, this fall, and every year. It's fascinating to see the importance of agriculture and food being revered throughout the world, especially in this time of the year, fall, harvest, at least here in the Northern American hemisphere, and the celebrations and holidays that have been created to honor the harvest, God, and nature. And even though every tradition and religion has its own beautiful stories and versions of these celebrations, there seems to be a common overarching theme connecting us all. We're very excited about our show today as we are celebrating food traditions around the world and learning about Kwanzaa, Sukkot, and Al-Adha today on An Organic Conversation. With us now, calling from Los Angeles, California, is Tulivu Jadi, the co-associate director of the African American Cultural Center. Tulivu, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having
us. An Organic Conversation. Very exciting show for us. We are talking about the importance of food from agriculture to the traditions to what is grown around the world, the varieties, and really today focusing on the cultural heritage and the spiritual heritage of these traditions in this hour. Talking about Kwanzaa, it's a fairly new holiday. It was developed in the 1960s.
Yeah.
How did that come about? How did that start?
Well, Kwanzaa, as you said, well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having us on this show and being a part of the conversation. We're looking forward to it, and I bring greetings to you and your listeners from the creator of Kwanzaa, Dr. Marlana Karenga. And Kwanzaa actually celebrates its 45th year celebration in this country this December. It was created in December of 1966. And it's an African-American holiday celebrated for 7 days from December 26th through January 1st. And as you may know, the holiday itself is based on the agricultural celebration of Africa called First Fruit Celebrations, which were times of harvest, in gathering, reverence, commemoration, recommitment, and celebration. And so Kwanzaa, when it's celebrated during this, or every year when it's celebrated, focuses on those five fundamental activities.
And it's a Swahili word coming from Matunda ja Kwanzaa, the first fruits of the harvest. But what was the original idea when Kwanzaa was formed? Who came together to get this off the ground?
Yes, well, as you said, the word Kwanzaa comes from the phrase Matunda ya Kwanzaa, which means first fruits. And Kwanzaa, the way it's as a holiday, it has an extra A. And that evolved as a result of a particular history of the organization US, where Kwanzaa was first celebrated. And it was done as an expression of African values. There were seven children at the Kwanzaa celebration in the early days. So each child wanted a letter to represent or stand with at the celebration. And so to be collective and to be inclusive of all the children who were there, an extra A was added.
That's beautiful.
A-W-A-N-Z-A-A. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, it initially had only six letters.
Tulivu, can you tell us about how Kwanzaa is celebrated? Who comes together? And what happens? What are the traditions?
Well, you have both public and family celebrations. Certainly among family, you have, over that seven-day period, the family will have a celebration, and then you have what you call public celebrations. These are celebrations at schools, at libraries, at universities, at a number of locations. And then you have family celebrations. So what the celebrations consist of when they're done is each day of Kwanzaa celebrates one of the values. So the holiday has seven values, as you know: umoja, which is unity; kujichagulia, which means self-determination; ujima, collective work and responsibility. The fourth day is ujamaa, cooperative economics. The fifth day is nia, purpose. The sixth day is kuumba, which means creativity. And the seventh day is faith. So each day, over breakfast or at the dinner or at some collective meal or celebration at the family or the community or public celebration decides that wants to express Kwanzaa that day, they make sure that, or try to make sure that, the activities of that day reflect the value being stressed and emphasized. And so, for example, on the first day, which is umoja, unity, there may be an effort made to do things together as a family, as friends, as a couple, as relatives, things that can be done at a senior citizen home, at a homeless shelter. Whatever is decided, it's done in the spirit of unity to give stress to that particular value. And then you take that approach with each value during those 7 days.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And on the phone with us is Tulivu Jadi, the co director of the African American Cultural Center, calling in from Los Angeles, as we are celebrating food traditions and talking about Kwanzaa.
Now, I was wondering, I know that you guys, there's a part of the celebration where there's a communal cup and there's Kanara candles and that are lit during the celebration of Kwanzaa. And I was wondering, could you tell us a little bit about how those fit into the holiday?
Yes, absolutely. The Kinata, or the unity cup that you mentioned, is one of the symbols of the holiday. And the unity cup that you mentioned, which in Swahili is called the Kikombe cha Umoja, is a symbol of the foundational principle and practice of unity during Kwanzaa. So when there's a family or a larger celebration, there's a unity cup that's passed around, and people will drink from the cup either symbolically or literally. Usually in the family it's done literally, but usually in a public celebration, it's just passed around.
Mm-hmm.
And to demonstrate that we all drink from the same cup, the same life experiences that we all share, and to promote unity. So the unity cup is one of the symbols of the holiday of Kwanzaa, along mm-hmm. with the fruit, which are called the mazal, the crops. There's an mkeka, or a straw mat, that's symbolic of our tradition, that's also used on your Kwanzaa set. The candles, the seven candles that you mentioned, are lit usually at the beginning or the end of a Kwanzaa ceremony. And so there are seven candles that are placed in the kinata, or the candle holder in English. And so those candles, so each day of Kwanzaa, a candle is lit. On the first day, you light the first candle, Umoja. And someone might speak to the principal. They'll state the principal and then state that day or how that week they could share and practice the principle of the holiday.
One of the things I heard you say is that that fresh fruit is one of the symbols of the holiday. Can you tell us which fruits are representative of the holiday, and then what other foods are eaten during the celebration?
Well, it's not a specific fruit.
Okay.
It's the holiday itself is based on harvest celebration, mm-hmm. so the stress and emphasis would be on fresh fruits and vegetables. Vegetables, for example, like yams, plantain, greens, and any fresh fruits that are in season.
And that might vary around the country or even around the world, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Is this holiday celebrated around the world, or is it specifically was founded for celebrating African American traditions in the United States? How has it been received over the last 45 years?
It's been received very, very well. In fact, there's not a continent we haven't received communication from that celebrates holiday. I mean, the Caribbean islands and London.
So it's far beyond the U.S. territory in this case.
Absolutely. Because, yes.
I want to come back to the seven principles. You call it, African idealism, the seven principles of blackness. And if I read them carefully, they apply as much to anyone else on this planet. I want to repeat them slowly for our listeners, even though you beautifully went through them already. But unity, self-determination, collective work, cooperative economics, purpose to restore community, and creativity and faith.
Mm-hmm.
Those are values that are values of humanity, much, much overarching than just, in quotes, for the black community.
Right.
Who determined these seven principles? How did they come about, and why seven?
Well, seven is more manageable. There certainly were other principles in African culture, but seven seemed to be
sweet
reoccurring
reason.
Principles that came up in Dr. Karenga's study
yes.
of African culture. So that's a good question because it comes up a lot. What about other principles? Other values that come up. But as you mentioned, Kwanzaa, in terms of its outreach and how it's been embraced both locally and worldwide, it's clearly an African holiday in terms of the values being African, and it was created for African peoples. But other people can and do celebrate Kwanzaa just like other people participate in Cinco de Mayo, besides Mexicans, Chinese mm-hmm. New Year, besides Chinese, Native Americans, powwows, besides Native Americans. And so the issue is that Kwanzaa has values that are specific to the people themselves, but that are broad enough to be embraced by people on a general level.
Yes, very much so.
It has a particular message that is good for the particular people, in this case African people. But if it is human in its content and ethical in its grounding, it speaks not just to the people, but it speaks to the world. And so that's why it's embraced by, and it resonates with values on a larger level outside of African people. But it has both a specific and a universal resonation.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hilbert.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And we're looking at food traditions today, Kwanzaa, Sukkot, and Eid al-Adha. With us on the phone from Los Angeles, from the African American Cultural Center, is the co-associate director, Mr. Tulivu Jadi. Tulivu, if people wanted to get involved, we are about a month or so, 6 weeks away. Kwanzaa this year is December 26th.
Yes.
And then for 7 days, if people wanted to explore that and be part of that community, do you have resources on your website where people can look up how to get in touch with an African American Cultural Center? And can people who are not African Americans participate actively?
Yes, thanks for asking. Yes, we do have a website, officialkwanzawebsite.org, officialkwanzawebsite.org. So on that, it gives a more extensive and comprehensive discussion of holiday in terms of its origin, its roots, and its practices.
And even even resources where to celebrate it in your community?
Yes, what they can do is call the number that's on there, 323-299-6124. And I'm glad you asked, because every year we have what is called a Kwanzaa Ujima Collective. So it's a coalition of other community-based organizations and churches and mosques and that celebrate or put on Kwanzaa celebrations in the city of Los Angeles. So that's going to be taking place in Los Angeles. So if people call 323-299-6124 or visit the website I gave earlier, we'll be able to list information on how they can participate in local Los Angeles-based Kwanzaa activities.
Wonderful.
Yeah, you know, I was wondering, can you give us a favorite memory of this holiday that stands out for you, or you know, how it's become meaningful or important to you as an individual?
There are many. There are many. One of the things that speaks to me strongly is, you know, Kwanzaa stresses being other-directed, being concerned with the vulnerable. So every year at our Karamu, which is on the sixth day, it's on Umoja, the first night, the Kwanzaa candlelighting ceremony that invites the community out. We ask all the people that attend that candlelighting ceremony to bring gloves or blankets or something warm for the homeless, and we take it to the appropriate shelters in the L.A. area. And what's so touching is to see the people have the items on by the time we pull out. Mm-hmm. So it just shows how much of a need there is for others to participate in this beautiful holiday, to participate in ways that we can give to them, to show that it's a celebration not only of the people that are at the event itself, but people that we can reach out to and let them know that we care for them as people and as persons.
Mm-hmm.
And so that always touches me, because usually I'm one of the people that participate in delivering the items to the homeless. So I would have to say that's one of the activities that every year touches me.
Thank you
that's
for sharing.
That's so beautiful.
Sharing with those less fortunate, sharing with those who are marginal and those who still need our time, attention, and our care.
Thank you so much, Tulivu. That it's such a beautiful holiday that you're sharing with us, and it's strengthening all communities. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you again for inviting us to be a part of the conversation.
Yes. What's the greeting, Joyous Kwanzaa, to you?
Yes, Hedi za Kwanzaa.
Hedi za Kwanzaa.
Hedi za Kwanzaa. Thank you, Tulivu.
I really enjoyed being a part of this.
Thank you.
And again, happy Kwanzaa. Hedi za Kwanzaa to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Beautiful. Kwanzaa. Coming up next is Sukkot. This was the African-American tradition, and now we are looking into the Jewish faith here on An Organic Conversation as we are celebrating food traditions in this country and around the world during this time of fall here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hilbert.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And we will be right back after this quick break. Stay tuned.
Shh. My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Bowman College has been offering professional training in nutrition and the culinary arts since 1989. Natural chefs will learn to master a healthful approach to classic culinary techniques, while nutrition consultants become experts in client consultation and the promotion of individualized plans for optimal health. Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. To find out more, visit bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And we have an exciting show today about food traditions, Sukkot, Kwanzaa, and Eid al-Adha. Today on an organic conversation, celebrations here in the United States and around the world during this time of fall and winter and harvest. Up next is a closer look on Sukkot. But before we dive into Sukkot, the Jewish celebration. Here is Mark Mulcahy with the weekly update of What's in Season.
Dun, dun, dun. What's in season? It's, are you ready? It's cabbage. Yes, people are going, cabbage? What is that? Well, it's actually, you know, a tremendous vegetable. It's a staple in many cultures all over the world. And generally, it's a vegetable that most people can afford. You get a lot for value for the money that you spend. And so it's actually pretty darn popular out there, even if you're not a person who eats it. And it is a brassica. It's a cruciferous vegetable. Actually, in cabbage in Latin is called brassica. So when you say, oh, that's a brassica vegetable, you're actually saying everything's connected to cabbage, and all the kales and col vegetables actually are. So there are three major kinds of cabbage: red, green, Savoy. Yes, there are Napa and bok choy, but those are the three most commonly purchased ones. And when you're choosing red or green, you want them to be, you know, very tight, and you want them to be heavy for their size. There that is again, very heavy for their size, a lot of water content, and not to have a bunch of cracks or bruises on the leaves, because that starts breaking down the nutritional value of it. When you get it home, you want to take the head, put it in a plastic bag, put it right in your crisper, and it should stay for probably 2 weeks. Savoy cabbage, which is a much more tender leaf, will only keep for about a week, so you want to use that sooner. if you need to store a partial head, you want to wrap it really tightly in plastic wrap, not loose in a bag, because it starts losing its vitamin C as soon as it's cut. As a matter of fact, it's interesting because when they tell you how to get the most nutritional value from your cabbage, they say don't cut your cabbage until you're ready to eat it to maintain the most vitamin C. And yet, if you want to get most of the cancer-fighting properties, you're supposed to actually cut your cabbage or shred it up and let it sit for 5 or 10 minutes so those enzymes actually start to activate so you can get most of the cancer-fighting qualities. And so that's kind of a, for me, that's kind of a quandary. I'm not sure what's best to recommend to you. I'll have to ask Sita. You know, if you're cooking it just like cauliflower where you get that sulfury kind of smell and you want to reduce that, what the best thing to do is steam it in a small amount of water for a short time and make sure you don't cook it in an aluminum pan, because that aluminum will help bring out that that sulfur. So, and lastly, if you're going to cut it and you want it to maintain its bright color, you want to make sure you use a stainless steel knife, not a carbon-based knife. And that's what's in season. And that's, Sita, do you know anything about that nutrition thing?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I always salt my cabbage once it's been cut because I want to press out a lot of that water and get it nice and crispy. Mm-hmm. And so while that's happening, those glucosinolates, which are the cancer-fighting properties in the brassica family, are being, I don't know if activated is the right word,
but
that's where you're getting them. And the vitamin C thing, I think sauerkraut actually has a lot of vitamin C, so I would go that direction with getting vitamin C out of my cabbage in a traditional lacto-fermented cabbage, which is sauerkraut, mm-hmm. and then get my glucosinolates from fresh cabbage.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. And don't get me started.
Yeah, don't get you started on glucosinolates.
No. On
sauerkraut.
I'm German. That's what I grew up on. Seriously.
It's like a teaser for us to mention it and not give you airtime.
I'm half sauerkraut. You're looking at it.
Well, some days.
Yes. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. Thank you, Mark. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Ronnie Bryan.
And that was What's in Season with Mark Mulcahy, the weekly update of what is in season and how to pick it, choose it, store it. Wonderful. We are celebrating food traditions today on An Organic Conversation. Kwanzaa, Sukkot, and Eid al-Adha. And we heard a beautiful review from Tulivu Jadi, the co-associate director of the African American Cultural Center, who called in from Los Angeles, California. And now with us is Tammy Roberts from the Keiserman Jewish Community Center, calling all the way from Philadelphia. Tammy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Such,
how are you?
Such a pleasure to have you. I'm really well. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
We are looking at celebrations in this time of year, doing the fall harvest, faith-based or religious, Sukkot, one of the most important Jewish holidays, actually biblically mandated, one of the three biblically mandated festivals. Tell us, how did Sukkot start and what's the story behind the holiday?
Well, Sukkot brings us back to the times in ancient Israel when the Jewish people would build huts near the edges of their fields during the harvest season. And these dwellings were called Sukkot. These Sukkot not only provided shade, but allowed the workers to maximize the amount of time they spent in the fields harvesting their food more quickly. And Sukkot is also related to the way the Jewish people lived when they left Egypt and wandered in the desert for 40 years. As they moved from one place to another, they built these little tents or booths called Sukkot, and this gave them temporary shelter in the desert. And now, as Jewish families are building their own Sukkot in their backyards, these Sukkot remind the Jewish people of both Israel's agricultural history and also of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt.
So you were saying one of the reasons for the Sukkot was so that the farmers could be closer to the land when they were needing to harvest. And we had found that Sukkot is agricultural in origin. Can you tell us about what foods are eaten during this time and what are the meanings of those foods?
Certainly. Many of the foods that are eaten are... Since Sukkot is a harvest festival, many of our menus typically include dishes with plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables. Stuffed vegetables are often served, and some say this, like stuffed foods like small cornucopias represent a bountiful harvest. Given the colorful surroundings of the sukkah and the harvest time, I like to serve a beautiful, colorful Israeli salad with vibrant colors,
mm-hmm.
and also I like to serve a fruit salad each evening.
And so when people are building these sukkots, are there community sukkots, or are they just individually built at people's homes?
No, there are. Well, there's both. There are community sukkot, and there are your home sukkot. We have a beautiful sukkah at the Kaiserman JCC where I work, and the children will come and they'll decorate the sukkah, and they'll have a snack in the sukkah, and they'll say the blessings that needed to be said in the sukkah.
Mm-hmm. And so who gathers? Who comes together? Is everybody in the community?
For the community sukkot, many times they'll have people in the community gathering at large. But for your home sukkot, you invite people over, your friends, your family, your relatives, and you gather for a wonderful festival meal together inside the sukkah.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Ryan.
And we are joined today by Tammy Roberts, who's a teacher at the Kaiserman Jewish Community Center, calling in from Philadelphia as we are taking a closer look at food traditions and spiritual and religious holidays, from Kwanzaa to Sukkot to Eid al-Adha coming up next. Tammy, it seems like after 40 years to follow that that biblical story, the Sukkot really stands for much more than just a dwelling that lets us remember the struggle. It's really a sign of hope.
That's exactly right.
What's the meaning for you? How did this come into your life, and when did you like get it? When did it become meaningful as a story for you personally?
Well, I always celebrated Sukkot with my family. We never had our own sukkah, but we always went to friends' homes and relatives' homes, and it's just a wonderful warm feeling sitting in your sukkah, where you can look up and see the moon and the stars at night and the sun during the day. And you look through the ceiling and this is what you see. And it just brings the whole holiday season together.
Is it indoors or outdoors when you see the sun and the stars? So this is built in the yard?
It's built out in the back, or in your yard. It is. Hmm. It's outdoors. And it's a requirement that you are able to see the sun and the stars in the evening and the moon and the stars in the evening and the sun during the day.
So as a sign of hope, but also it actually is the moment, tent-like, where you connect to nature and literally the stars above you and the sun and the elements. So even though you have shelter to some degree, it is a reminder of how we are connected to everything else.
That's right. The roof of the sukkah is decorated with branches and leaves, and fruit is hanging and children's decorations are hanging from it, so you're able to see right through the ceiling.
What's the building material that is used, like corn husks, or what? If we have a picture, if you were to describe it, how would you build yours?
Well, a sukkah is a three-sided structure built out of wood, and they have corn husk in it, and they have dried fruit hanging, and they have regular fruit hanging. They put the pine branches on the top of the sukkah, so again you can see out of the top, and they decorate it with fragrant vegetables and fruits and things.
Sounds delicious and aromatic.
Yeah.
I would want to spend my time in there.
it really is. It's just a fun holiday to get together with your family and friends, and it's kind of chilly here in Pennsylvania now.
I was just going to ask that. I was sitting here thinking, okay, she's in Pennsylvania, and I just came back from Pittsburgh last night, and I was thinking, what's it like there now when it's October and you're...
today on November 5th. I mean, it happened a month ago, but were able to avoid the snow, right?
Right. Philadelphia is a little warmer than Pittsburgh, but it is chilly out there, and you just go in with your sweatshirts on.
Okay.
You just enjoy.
Tammy, I'm curious. You were talking about all the things that are, you know, the food traditions, making the Israeli salad. But I want to know about some of the other traditions that take place in the sukkah. Can you tell us about what else happens?
Yes. A very special tradition that takes place in the sukkah, it's actually a mitzvah. It's something that we're required to do, is to recite the blessings over the four kinds of species. And these species include a citron, which is sort of like a, it's called an etrog. It's kind of like a lemon. Mm-hmm. And then you also have a palm branch, three myrtle twigs, and two willow branches. And what you do is you hold the etrog in one hand, and that has a very good smell to it. And then in your other hand, you gather the palm, the myrtle, and the willow, and you bundle these together. And when it's all bundled together, it's called a lulav. And what you do is then you take your lulav and your etrog and you hold them together, and we shake it all around to show that God is everywhere.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Tammy, for taking the time for us to dive into, again, one of the three most important Jewish holidays, Sukkot. What's coming up next in the Jewish calendar? What is the next important celebration that you have coming up?
Well, in December, we celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah, which would be our next celebration. Mm-hmm. And that's our Festival of Lights.
And what's the third one?
Shavuot, which is in June, is the receiving of the Torah from God on Mount Sinai.
Yes. Well, wonderful and so interesting to hear about this. We feel it's one of those stories that, you know, within the Jewish community, of course, it's celebrated and well known. And outside of these food traditions or religious traditions, there's fairly little overlap. So thank you so much for sharing your story and the story of Sukkot with our listenership, which is here in the United States and far beyond even. We get comments from as far as United Arab Emirates and Norway and Africa. So this is beautiful. Thank you for your work and for spending time with us. It's a pleasure
to
have
you.
With us was Tammy Roberts from the Kaizerman Jewish Community Center, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, as we are celebrating food traditions and religious or faith-based traditions around the world. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And we're diving right in to Eid al-Adha, celebrating food traditions today, the celebration of the Islamic community. When we come back right after the break, stay tuned.
Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at BowmanCollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N College.org.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, T-R-A-C-E-S-F.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at UrbanRemedy.com. That's UrbanRemedy.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And we are celebrating food traditions today. At least here in North American Hemisphere, fall harvest is the start of celebrations and holidays that have been created to honor the harvest, God, and nature. And even though these traditions and religions have their own beautiful stories and versions and celebrations, there seems to be a common overarching theme connecting them and us all. We heard about Kwanzaa. We just had Tammy Roberts on from the Kaiserman Jewish Community Center talk about Sukkot. And now with us is Noor Aziz from the Islamic Society of Boston to talk about Eid al-Adha. Noor, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for making time. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's our pleasure.
Eid al-Adha, what's the story around it? How and when did it start? And what is the story behind the holiday?
So Eid al-Adha is one of two Eids that Muslims celebrate around the world. The celebration is really a celebration of sacrifice, particularly by Abraham, the patriarch of the Judeo-Christian and Islamic tradition. So the story goes that God commanded Abraham to bring his wife, his Egyptian wife Hagar, and their son Ishmael from the land of Canaan to the land of Arabia. And he was commanded by God to leave his wife and child behind in Arabia while he returned back to Canaan. Now, he left some supplies and food for his child and son, but obviously this is a big sacrifice for any father, you know, to leave your child and wife behind.
Possibly for their death, right, as a true sacrifice.
Yeah, it's a true sacrifice. It really speaks volumes about how Abraham, in essence, submitted to God's will, just left his wife and child behind in a foreign land, and unless some like I said, their supplies were left, but they quickly ran out, and so now Hagar was looking for food once the supplies ran out. She left the child on the ground and ran back and forth between two mountains, frantically looking for food. And these two mountains, Marwa and Safa, in Arabia, close to Mecca, and, you know, back and forth, just frantic, trying to find food for the baby infant, Ishmael. And, you know, the sacrifice was relieved. Once Ishmael, he was kicking the ground, crying, and out poured a spring, the spring of Zamzam, which to this day still exists in Mecca. So that's one story of the, you know, the sacrifice done by the family of Abraham. And the second story goes where, when Ishmael grew up, God commanded Abraham to sacrifice his son, you know, his precious only son, basically his prized possession. So, of course, if you know, the sacrifice is to happen, you need both Abraham and Ishmael to surrender. So this is, you know, a lot of people forget that this was both a sacrifice by Abraham to be willing to sacrifice his son, as well as the sacrifice by Ishmael to be willing to be sacrificed. So the story goes that they were preparing to do the sacrifice, and then Satan comes up to, in some sense, dissuade the pair from, you know, going through this, and Abraham would throw pebbles to Satan to drive him away, and then went back to, you know, this attempt to want to sacrifice his child. And as soon as he was about to do it, God's command came down that he no longer need to do it, that, you know, his sacrifice was accepted, and instead Abraham would sacrifice a ram, because in Islam, the intention is really what matters, not so much the act. So the fact that he had all the intention to do the sacrifice, and that was sufficient.
Which is really, that's really the message of the story, right? It's the true surrendering to your faith. It's the true surrendering to God. And once you do, there's no punishment, obviously. There's no, you can't hope for it. You got to surrender fully. But in this story, once Abraham did and was willing to even sacrifice his own son, Ishmael, God intervened and said, okay, you have shown yourself, you have shown your heart, you have shown your faith and trust in me. Of course, it was never about the death of his son.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
How is this message celebrated today? What does the Islamic faith do with this? Literally today being November 5th, Eid al-Adha is tomorrow. November 6th. What will happen tomorrow? How do you celebrate the Festival of Sacrifice?
First of all, Muslims follow a lunar calendar, so it's slightly different from, it's shorter than the solar calendar that, you know, most of us are more familiar with.
Yes.
It
changes every year.
Yeah, it changes every year because it's shorter. So Eid technically starts on the 10th day of Zulhijjah, the last month of in the Muslim lunar calendar. And so it comes, you know, it changes every month by about 10 days earlier each year. And the day in Islam actually starts at sunset. And so the day goes from sunset the day before to sunset the day after.
Mm.
And so technically,
Eid
starts tonight at sunset.
Oh, okay.
And lasts until sunset tomorrow. So how we celebrate, you know, depends on whether you are doing the pilgrimage to Mecca. So for those who are physically capable and financially able, it is made compulsory to do the pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia at least once in their lifetime. And for those who are not doing the pilgrimage, they do something different. But basically what they do is rituals very similar to what Abraham and his family did 4,000 years ago. So for those who do the pilgrimage, go to Mecca, they would do a lot of the rituals that I mentioned. For instance, they would go back and forth between the two mountains to do the ritual, which Hajar did in sacrifice, you know, back and forth. This is a distance of about 100 meters back and forth. So the pilgrims would do this. And then the act when Abraham would throw stones to drive away Satan is also done as well in a place called Arafah. In Saudi Arabia, the ritual of slaughtering animals is also done as well, and so that would be in some sense many rituals that Muslims do if they do the pilgrimage to Mecca. Now imagine this scene of millions of people from all around the world coming together. It really is I haven't done my pilgrimage, but I have a lot of friends who have, and they say like how it's a transformative experience. Everyone's wearing the same white, pale clothes. It's a sense of equality among mankind. It's a moment. It's a start of change of life, change of bad habits, like removal of bad habits, and increasing more good deeds. It's a wonderful time, basically, where people just make a point to be a better person, to devote themselves not just only to God, but also to improving relations with people all around them, whether it's family or friends or neighbors.
That's beautiful. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And we're talking with Noor Aziz from the Islamic Society of Boston and her description of Eid al-Adha.
Noor, so there's so much sharing that happens on this holiday. You were talking about, you know, what happens when people do travel to Mecca, but what happens at home, is my understanding, is really the sense of sharing with your community and, in some sense, sacrifice, but also building community, sharing food. Can you tell us a little bit about those traditions, what people are doing at home as opposed to traveling?
Absolutely. So for instance, here in Boston, what we do in the morning, and everyone does this wherever they are in the world, they typically gather in the morning at the mosque or any congregational center that they may have and do a short prayer to God. So everyone comes, and this is great because everyone in the neighborhood, whether you're rich, strong, or influential, or if you're like poor, weak, or like ostracized, everyone comes together and people pray side by side, shoulder to shoulder, feet to feet is what we say, mm-hmm. in lines. And after prayers, people generally embrace and exchange greetings with one another while they're in that vicinity. Some things that I do with my family is that we give gifts to children and we visit relatives, particularly people who we don't get a chance to visit the rest of the year. This is a chance for increased visiting one another. And you make lots of prayers for everyone, including families who've passed away, and most importantly, you give charity to the poor. So for people who celebrate it in their homes or in their hometowns, they also do the sacrificial act of sacrificing a domestic animal. And this sacrifice, the meat, which is called udiya, is then distributed to three groups. So a third of it is retained by the family who does the sacrifice. A third of it goes to relatives, friends, or neighbors. And then the last third, is the most important, is distributed to the needy and poor. If you think about some poor countries where, you know, there's barely even food to eat, this is a chance for people to actually get their intake of meat and iron. You know, some of these people where they're, some of these places where they're really poor, they depend on Eid al-Adha for a time to actually receive meat, which they don't typically eat the rest of the year.
So speaking of that, the rest of the year, I mean, these holidays, as important as they are also reminders for us to live as better people, to bring out the best of us. You said it's the removal of any ego that is in the way often. And, you know, even though meat is literally divided three ways, as you said, nobody will go hungry. Nobody will be left outside. Mm-hmm. You know, the gathering place in any way in prayer, it is one people. And we find that throughout the traditions that really the theme is community. The real theme underlyingly is community. How, you know, in this case, through Eid al-Adha tonight and tomorrow, what do you see how that's being upheld throughout the year? It's such a beautiful notion, that reminder, and yet, honestly, we should have Eid al-Adha every day in our hearts, at least, as many other traditions. We should live like that. We heard from Kwanzaa about the seven traditions of the seven principles. Of blackness, seven-day festivals, unity, self-determination, collective work, cooperative economics. Again, that the purpose, restoring community. It seems like we as a people are all following the same picture of what it means to be a meaningful citizen in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What do you see in your faith, how it's being upheld throughout the year? What do you do to keep that spirit alive and strong, and that it's not just, in this case, tomorrow, November 5th, but that people live like this forever?
Mm-hmm. So in Islam, we understand this concept of people have ups and downs in their spiritual high, if you want to call it. So the idea is that the two Eids, actually, so this is Eid al-Adha. We have another Eid called Eid al-Fitr. It's about two months ago. But basically, these Eids are celebrations of two special periods of intense worship. So Eid al-Fitr, the first Eid, represents the end of a month that I think many will be familiar, the month of Ramadan. So the month of Ramadan is 30 days of intense worship and devotion, and Eid al-Fitr kind of celebrates the end of that of that 30-day period of intense devotion, increased goodwill to family and improving relations, being more concerned of your neighbor, and all these other, you know, things that the religion encourages to do. And then Eid al-Adha marks, you know, as I mentioned, it's the 10th day of Zulhijjah. It actually marks the end of 9 days of intense worship as well. And these 9 days are actually even more important, or actually at least mentioned by the Prophet as better days even than 30 days of Ramadan. Although even Muslims, sometimes we think that Ramadan is a month of intense worship, but actually the 9 days that just ended are actually the best days in the year. And so Muslims feel that these are times of extra rejuvenation, because it's kind of like when, you know, you're the rest of the year, you're encouraged to do all these things, and you're you know, the devotion wanes down, you know, as the year comes by. And then come another Ramadan, or come another 9 days of Zulhijjah, you're supposed to increase that worship and increase that goodness and goodwill to everyone, and improve and it's all a great lifestyle habits.
That's right. It's a great reminder, of course, important, that we get reminded of that and come back to that very basic.
Right, exactly. So it's like a rejuvenation, exactly. And so hopefully that spirit's, you know, the increased devotion, the impact of this intense period will last,
sure,
you know, for the whole year. And then you'll meet another Ramadan and 90s of Zulhijjah, and then you increase that again, and then it'll go down, and then you'll meet another one. So it's kind of like a cycle.
Noor, I think we could all use a little bit more of this sharing spirit in our hearts.
Always.
Is there a way, people who are looking to celebrate and want to get more information, is there a website that they can visit to teach them more about how to celebrate and practice with you?
Absolutely. There's a good bank of information. I would encourage people to visit would be whyislam.com, so whyislam.com. It's just a bank of all kinds of information about Islam. It definitely talks about the celebrations, Eid al-Fitr, Eid al-Adha as well.
Beautiful.
And we are talking a lot about, in this case, why Islam, in regard to inner faith work, and I know you have a keen interest in that as well. Are people allowed to participate in the celebration like this if they are not of Islamic descent?
Absolutely. Actually, here in our center, Eids are extra special times to bring friends or classmates or coworkers. So they come and they see, you know, how the Muslims celebrate. So basically, anyone can enter a mosque at any time. For instance, our mosque, we're always open. We have all kinds of programming for Muslims and non-Muslims. You don't need a permission to enter a mosque. You can just enter and witness. It's basically open-door policy for all mosques around the world. So Eid is just a special time where you can witness Muslims, you know, act out rituals. So, you know, it's an interesting time to come and watch, I guess.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I just wanted to say Eid Mubarak.
Thank you. Eid Mubarak to you, too.
And we really appreciate you being on the show.
How will you celebrate this tonight? You're starting tonight. What will you do in a few hours?
Probably make a lot of phone calls to family members, catch up. Yeah, it's probably what I'm going to do tonight.
And tell them how much you love them and, yeah,
absolutely.
build community.
Yes,
thank you.
Noor
Aziz, the outreach manager from the Islamic Society of Boston, calling in from Boston, Massachusetts. Again, the best resource for the holiday starting tonight is whyislam.com. Thanks, Noor. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer is Jen Lloyd. Today, substituted really well by Robert Costa. Production assistants are Lauren Mulcahy and Vanessa Fern.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Bryan.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Can no longer see. just let my love throw a spark. And have a little faith in me. And when the tears you cry.